Jerusalem, we celebrate on the 15th, on Monday, because any walled city from the time of Joshua, Yehoshua ben Nun, because that's when they, because back in the day, walled city meant you were protected. It probably won't do that much good today because we have planes and bombs, so they could go right over and drop in bombs. But back in the day, so they used, that's how you were a fortified city. You had a walled city, and that, you know, we still have the walled city in of Jerusalem, like the old city. So what about if you live in the new city of, I'll make the distinction, I'll call the old city Yerushalayim, and I'll call the new city Jerusalem, like Ben Yehuda, the Shuk, all those places, Yaffa. So when do they read Purim? So even though they're not in the walled city, but they also read on the 15th, because the rule is not only the walled city itself, but cities adjacent, close to the walled city, also take on that status. So the whole Yerushalayim, the whole Jerusalem, reads on the 15th. So usually, it's picked for you, but either you're going to be celebrating. So in Hamilton, there's no discussion. It's the 14th, but the. So, in fact, for most places all over the world, it's the 14th. The only definite place is Jerusalem. There are certain places that are doubtful. What do you mean, doubt? We don't know if there was a walled city from the time of Yehoshua ben Nun. The historians have to do their homework. So some, we're not sure. Maybe it came after. Maybe it wasn't around then. So in certain places, what they do is, they read the Megillah on both days. They read the Megillah on the 4th, so they read it on Sunday, and then they read it on 5th. Again, if you know, like Jerusalem, you only read on the 15th, but if you're not sure, you'd read the 14th regular, and the 15th, you'd read the Megillah over, but without any blessings, because when it comes to blessings, we always strict or lenient, and we don't make another blessing. Because maybe we already fulfilled the commandment. So therefore, in fact, interesting question, unfortunate because of what's happening in Gaza now, but the question was asked, the IDF soldiers who are in Gaza fighting the war against Hamas, so what day do you celebrate Purim in Gaza? So what kind of question is that? What day do you celebrate Purim in Hamilton? Like, what's the question? So apparently, Gaza, or known in Hebrew as Aza, but Gaza is the English name, there's a discussion whether it might have been a walled city from the time of Yehoshua ben Nun. Like maybe it was Gaza City and then all the surrounding areas. Again, we haven't really had, even before 2005, it wasn't, I'm not sure how much of a Jewish community we had living there. Probably goes back to maybe the 1920s or earlier. At some point, apparently, there might have been some custom about keeping 2 days celebrating in Gaza, the 14th and the 15th. But the bottom line is, since today, it's, you know, there's no Jewish people really living there. They're only there because of the war and other things. So the bottom line is, they'd only read on the 14th. They'd celebrate Purim. Even on those cities where we said they have to read Megillah on the 15th, the Purim's still on the 14th. In other words, it's just like they'll do the Shalach Manas, they'll do the meal. It just be for the Megillah reading in terms of that. So generally, which is interesting, there are 2 days. Generally in a Jewish holiday, no matter where you live, you celebrate the same day. There is a different concept that because of the calendar, that we keep an extra day of Passover, Sukkot, but no, there's no argument what day. We just keep an extra day, they don't. But everyone knows when Passover is. Here, we actually have a separate celebration depending on where you live, that we don't have any other holiday. So some point out that it was because Mordechai was rebuking the people. Not just Mordechai, is because what happened was is the walled city says, we're not in danger now, we're protected. They were. But all the other Jews who weren't in walled cities weren't protected. So they they didn't feel the connection, the achdus, that they didn't feel the pain of everyone else. And therefore, as a reminder that we always have to keep the unity, no matter whether, you know, I might not be in Gaza now, but there are Jewish people fighting, so and it's even worse, there are hostages in Gaza. So we have to feel the pain, even though we might not be personally in danger at the moment, but we have to feel the pain of any Jew anywhere. So they rebuked the walled cities. They felt a false sense of comfort, of safety, while the rest of the Jewish people were in danger, and therefore, so they instituted a separate day to remind people, you know, that's not the right attitude. In other words, remember that we're all together and we have to show unity. So some point out that it was a rebuke of the people who were in Shushan, who were in the walled city. They didn't feel enough of a connection to Jews who were in danger, who lived everywhere. Therefore, they instituted. The simple reason is because that's when they were in danger. That the people who didn't have the walls were in danger on the 13th. So therefore, they celebrated, after they survived, they celebrated on the 14th. The walled cities were in danger on the 14th, so they celebrated, you know. So there's practical reasons why, but they point out either way, it's Purim's a time. It's always unity is a time all year round, but especially different holidays. So we'll go back, we'll discuss some of the major mitzvahs we have on Purim. So we'll start with one of the favorites, Mishloach Manos. That who doesn't like getting a gift and a food gift? So I'll just go over. I'll give you an overview of the different things we have, and then we'll go through them. So one we all know is Megillah reading. We're going to have that, and then there's Mishloach Manos. Is that basically you send? There has to be a minimum of two gifts to one person. So you have to have two different types of food. Two different types of food in, do you want to sit here or? Yeah, I got you.
That's okay.
You want to sit over here or?
I can sit on
this. Yeah.
So I'm between Helen and me.
No, right here. No, she needs to see.
I can sit on the bench.
Yeah, that's what you said last time.
Yeah.
It's your makom kavua, your fixed place now.
I am, thank you.
Because two times might be creating a chazaka. Yeah. So Mishloach Manos is I remember, it's always the old question of convenience versus non. Like back in the day growing up, I remember that was a big, you know, the night before that we spent putting all the Mishloach Manos together, and you know, and that's why you remember it. Today, fortunately, we live in a world of convenience. There's a lot of good to that, but unfortunately, you lose out on the chinuch, on the teaching your children, your grandkids, the next generation of. So, you know, so now it's, you know, many synagogues or even you just go to the store and you order, okay, give me already pre-packed and all, you know, we're a more affluent society. So again, so it's good to people who can't do it. It's good to have. But on the other hand, it's a problem, you know, you don't have the same education where people, you know, you feel, and it's not just for that, any type, I'm sure, you know, overall, I think the gain is good that we're able to get, you know, more access to kosher food. And, you know, sometimes it's too hard for people to do, but there's also, it's always the con side is we lose on, you know, on your experience you had with your parents, grandparents, you know, they worked a lot harder in terms of, you know, we didn't have the access and getting and making this food. So it's always a blessing and curse. You know, different parts are good, you know, and then you have to try to make up what you're missing. So you have to educate them in different ways. You know, maybe now they got to go to school now. People didn't get to go to school. So hopefully it balances out. Hopefully it's better. But either way, so Mishloach Manos is that you minimally, people do much more, but minimally I have to prepare two types of food, two different foods, and you give it to one person. That is your minimum obligation. If you do that, if you give let's say a chocolate bar and a bottle of Coke, just for simplicity's sake, you give that to someone on Purim, you fulfill your commandment of Mishaloch Manos. So many people, yeah, Helen.
Charity.
That's Matanos Rav Yonam. I'll get to that. That's a different, yeah. That's a different halacha, yeah. Okay. But yeah, I said I'd go through all of them. Matanos Rav Yonam is you have to give to two separate poor people. So you give, and how much money do you give? So it's a relative amount, whatever. It's supposed to be enough money they could have food to eat. It's a discussion whose standard did you go by, your standard or the poor person's standard. But as it may, minimally, it should be enough of a gift that the person could have a meal. And you're giving it to the poor, so obviously you have to assume he doesn't have much food. So as Maimonides writes, one should be much stricter, do a lot more matanos levionim than shalach manas. Like many people do the opposite. I mean, do a lot of both is good, because one's good just for education and the kids. The kids like participating. But he says, because the ultimate joy is helping the needy and the vulnerable and the poor, so we should make sure that we should go overboard on matanos levionim. You could do the regular shalach manas, but it's always the poor people or the people in need. But it's supposed to be enough. You give them enough money, they could have a decent meal on Purim because of the mitzvah of Purim. So in Shalach Manos, that's the minimum. So why do we have a mitzvah of Shalach Manos? Like, why did on Purim, and it says the Megillas Esther, Mordechai and Esther, they told the Jewish people, a quote from the Megillas Esther, "U'mishalach manas ish l'reyehu u'matanas lev yonim." It says explicitly in the book of Esther to give shalach manas and matanas lev yonim. So what's the reason for mishalach manas? What's the reason behind the commandment? Anyone? So there are two schools of thought, as always. There's probably more in Judaism, but we'll just stick to two. So one school of thought is, it's because, as I mentioned, we have a mitzvah to have a meal on Purim. So to ensure, so it's an extension of the Matanos Rav Yonim we'll see later, but it's to ensure that every person has enough food to eat for Purim, so the custom, not this custom, the halacha is that everyone goes around, you give shalach manas to people to ensure that, that's why some point out, it's best, I mean, any food, even jelly beans could be used for dessert, so any food is good. But some like say maybe you should give some challah, some chicken soup, some chopped liver. It's something that people potentially could use, during the meal. Or if you're giving a dairy meal, pizza, pasta, whatever you're making or getting. Yeah, so therefore, either way, so one school of thought is the reason for Mishalach Manos is that to ensure every Jew has enough food to eat for the meal of Purim. That's one school of thought. Another school of thought is actually from the Rav Alkabaz. You might be familiar with the name. He was one of the rabbis who lived in Svat. Svat is during the time of Rav Yosef Cairo, but it's a very mystic town. And he's the one who's the Friday Night Live, L'chol Dodi. The famous Friday night song that we sing in Shul Friday night, that's from him. So he also wrote a small book on Purim. But in his book, he writes, what's the purpose of Shalach Manos? He says, again, getting back to unity, it's to make peace with one another. And certainly, he says, if you had a little run-in with someone, you should specifically try to give a Shalach Manos to someone who, you didn't hit it off so much in order to reignite, to bring back the relationship. Of course, to give to a friend, and continue, it's to foster friendship and everything else. So actually, these two reasons go back to much further, meaning go back to the Megillah. In other words, where do we see a connection? Where do we see something with the Suda in the Megillah? In the Megillah reading, it talks about a suda, a meal. What meal is discussed in the... I'll give you a hint, in the beginning, before you fell asleep. No, in the beginning of the Megillah, but the story is like this. It's basically, this part's not in the Megillah, this is the history before the Megillah. What? Yeah, I'm saying, but the meal we'll see with Achashverosh. So what happened was, is the first temple was destroyed, and then we had a tradition based on the prophets that 70 years later, that the second temple was going to be rebuilt. That was the issue was, no one knew exactly when the 70 years started. No one knew when. So other anti-Semites picked different times, and they picked the wrong time, and they were destroyed. So Achashverosh, he picked this time because in his counting, it was the 70 years were up. He was celebrating the end of Judaism, the end of Jews. That's it. God rejected you. He's not rebuilding another temple, and that's the end of it. In fact, tradition has it, he took out the garments and the vessels from the temple, you know, which now it's Rome has it, and the Vatican, they have a lot of our stuff. That's a separate discussion. But he had, they said, and he went to the party, and he was defiling all the holy things from the temple because he was celebrating. In fact, and imagine, there were Jews at this party. Wow, these wings are great. The ribs are amazing. They were celebrating the end of Judaism, and they were there enjoying the party, which is one of the mistakes we'll see. It's like, for instance, when I was growing up in Brooklyn, there was, I don't know if anyone remembers, it was like the Son of Sam killer. It's not important. The details don't make a difference, but I'll get to it. So he went ahead. He was like, you know, murdering people, you know, throughout different, you know, randomly, or maybe in his mind, he had some reason, who knows. So imagine, so at the end of the year, he's making a party. He has all the victims he murdered, and he has pictures. And imagine, like, the mother of a victim walked into that room, but she'd run out screaming. Would she go and start enjoying the party? That's what the Jews were doing, enjoying the party that Achashverosh was making, that the Jews are rejected. To me, as it may, it was a terrible sin that they participated in the party. Again, you know, some people might have had to go because of politics and that, but Mordechai wasn't enjoying the party if he had to be there. So be it as it may, that was the Suda. So in fact, the rabbis asked, is a story in the Talmud, the students asked, one of the great rabbis, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. He's a famous rabbi, and that's also on Lag BaOmer. That's the big celebration, especially in Israel, in Meiron. They go to his kever. He was very mystic, you know, he's very big in Kabbalah. So everyone loves Rav Shimon, even if non-observant. Everyone, they go, you know, hundreds of thousands. Hopefully they'll have it all safe. It's going to be a bigger challenge this year because it's Saturday night, Lag BaOmer, and then you have the whole issue with Shabbos. So we'll save Lag BaOmer for after Passover to discuss. So they point out, they asked the students, they asked Rav Shimon Bar Yochai and said, Rabbi, Rebbe, what do the Jews, see, it's interesting, usually in the Bible, God tells us what we did wrong, and then we know, okay, we have to try to change it. But if you read in the whole Megillah, it doesn't actually say, we just know Haman came along, Haman, and made a decree to destroy all, but doesn't say what the Jews did wrong. So they asked, Rebbe, what did the Jews do wrong to deserve such a decree for Haman to say he's going to kill men, women, and children? So he was on the cutting edge of education. Rav Shimon, he said, "You tell me what you think, students. Why do you think it happened?" So one of them said, "I'll tell you what I think. Because the Jews ate at the meal of Achashverosh, which was, as I pointed out, which was the celebrating the end of the Jews." So he said, "You're saying, well, but there's one little problem with that answer. Then only the Jews in Shushan should have been punished, right? What about the other 126 other provinces?" So he said, "Good point. It would have been enough, but and he goes on to say the reason was because in the previous gener Rashin, there was a king, Nebuchadnezzar. He was the king of Babel. He, you know, tried to take over the world. So before the Purim story, the Jews bowed. He built a idol of himself, and he made the Jews like bow down to it. So even though they didn't believe it, so the Talmud says, so same thing. Outwardly, Haman made a decree, but it never God didn't let it happen. So too, outwardly they served idols, but inwardly they believed. So that's the it was punishment for what they did during the time of Nebuchadnezzar. But the point being is, what do we see from here? That we see that two possible reasons why the decree came, because they went to a Suda, a meal they shouldn't have went to, or idol worship. So we see, so that's why we see Sholach Manas, according to one opinion, is to have food for the meal. In other words, if the sin of Purim was having an illicit meal, a meal you shouldn't have been at, so how do we rectify it? By having a mitzvah Suda, by having celebrating the day of Purim and inviting people over. So that's why we celebrate, that's why Sholach Manas is for the meal. And we know idol worship, the Talmud tells us in many places, even though obviously God doesn't like idol worship, but he has plenty of tolerance. He'll give you time to come back. If you don't treat people properly, he has zero tolerance. But even if you're doing the worst sins, if it's between him and you, okay, I'll give you more time. Maybe you're doing it for this reason. When you're mistreating other people, he doesn't have high tolerance level. But when you're mistreating him, he'll give you some time to change and etc. How do you rectify people doing idol worship? By having unity. As long as you have unity, God won't punish you. We find many times in Jewish history where they weren't so observant. In fact, they were worshiping idols. But since the Jews got along with one another, God didn't punish them. Other times when they might have been well steeped in religion, but if they didn't know how to treat one another properly, then God brings down punishment. So we see the two schools of thought of Sholach Manas goes back to the original, I don't like saying the original sin, not Adam, but the sin that happened before. It was so one rectification is by having unity. So that's why it serves both purposes. When we give gifts, we're making friends with someone, and we're also having a food seed. So that's why the custom of Sholach Manas. Let me ask you, let's say I'm only going to do one. I'm going to do one Sholach Manas. So if you give 20, so I'm in here, Bernie. Oh, Zelda, come on down. Yeah, come join us. Absolutely.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah. She heard the discussion on Purim. Zelda wanted to be part of it. Absolutely. Sit down and join us. I know she knows a lot about Sholach Manas, Zelda. She's done it many times. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, right here. I have another chair back here.
No. Zelda, you can sit there.
No, Zelda, you sit there.
Right where you are. That's your. Oh, we're talking about to Helen. We were talking to Helen.
Sorry, Zelda, you sit there.
Okay.
Here, right here. Let's assume you only do one Sholach. Many people give plenty, so it's not. But let's say I come to someone's home Purim morning. How you doing? Everything great? Beautiful day, hopefully. It'll be cold, but no rain or snow. And I give them the Sholach Manas, and they say, "Thank you so much." Thanks, but no thanks. Is my wife's already getting ready for Pesach? She doesn't want any more. We have plenty of Sholach Manas. Thank God we don't need it. I don't want it, but thank you. So if you offer someone a Sholach Manas and they don't accept it, do you get the mitzvah or not? Me. I'm offering it to someone else. They don't take it, and that's it. That's the only Sholach Manas. Would I get the mitzvah of Sholach Manas?
Yes.
Okay, everyone in agreement? So,
yeah, so... If the person doesn't take it, do they...
Okay. Is that Bernie? Who's coming?
It's Bernie, yes. Bernie.
Perfect. Come on down. Everyone's waiting for you.
Yeah, you got that right.
So if you don't accept it, what happens, Rabbi?
That's something to discuss right now. Okay. After I get Bernie a chair, I'll discuss it.
He's got his walker.
Oh. Yeah, don't sit on the chair, yeah.
He's getting
his chair. I'll get a chair from here. That's dangerous. It's not Bernie, you can sit there. So the answer will be yes, like Brenda said, but what's the issue? So we said there are two schools of thought on what is the reason behind Shalach Manas. So if the purpose of Shalach Manas is to have food to eat, I can't eat a thank you. If I didn't take any food, then the person would not fulfill his obligation because I can't. However, if the purpose is peace, then of course, I showed you, and I'm not going to force you to take it, but they know I try to, create the friendship, so therefore it's a go. We assume, like Brenda, that halacha is, I get the mitzvah, even if the person doesn't accept it. That's what's brought down in the Shulchan Aruch. I'll give you another one. Let's say I come home from shul, I come back from Megillah Sunday morning in my house. I see this beautiful Shalach Manas. All my favorites, Bar Tanura wine, some good chocolates, ribs, wings, whatever. But there's no name on it. I have no idea who, either they sent it anonymous or the wind blew away the card. Does that person get the mitzvah? Because I have no idea who sent it. So if you say it's because of the meal, then I'm certainly enjoying the meal. But if it's supposed to engender friendship, maybe you say, well, I know someone in the community likes me. Or perhaps it has to be more personal. Or better yet, I'll give you another question. Let's say you find a big Amazon package on Purim. You see a nice new MacBook computer. You find a bicycle. Maybe even someone left you a car in the driveway. They definitely create a friendship, but do they fulfill Shalach Manas? So if it's food, then no. I guess in theory, I could sell the car and eat a lot of food, but those are just the dichotomy in terms of the different. So we assume generally we try to give food, and we try to give food that people in theory would use during the meal. But even if they don't, I still got my mitzvah as long as I gave them the opportunity to. Let's say the same thing happens with the poor. We have the mitzvah of matanas levyonim. Let's say I walk over or the poor person came to me, whatever, I offer them money and the poor person doesn't take it. They say either it's not enough or they're too proud. They don't want it. No, I'm not taking money. I'm okay, even though they're not, but they don't want to take it. It's embarrassing to take a handout. The bottom line is, do I get my mitzvah of matanas levyonim if the poor person does not accept it? So there the answer is no. Because we see by charity it's result-oriented. In other words, it's not enough for me to give it. That's a separate discussion. You put the money in the Pushkin shul, and then it gets stolen, and it never makes it to the honey. Again, so you're going to get rewarded. God will give you credit. But the bottom line, until the poor person receives it, there is no technical mitzvah of charity. So but I'll bring you a proof from the Megillus Esther, what I'm saying, because the quote, it says, what is the mitzvah of Shalach Manos? U'mishloach Manos. The mitzvah is sending gifts. I don't care. You don't have to take it or not, but as long as I sent it, but u'matana. Matana always means a gift hand to hand. So, and that's a general rule in charity all year round. It's important. It's not enough that I'm giving charity. Which is a good thing. Usually that's the first step, but that's only half of it. The poor person has to receive it for the charity actually to happen. So by Shalach Manas, they can say thanks, but no thanks. But if by poor person, you have to find someone else. You have to find two other people. because so practically speaking, we don't necessarily come in contact with Jewish poor on a daily basis. So the custom is here is you give to the Jewish social services. That's like the, and then you give the, in advance, and they go around on Purim. They specifically go around and give money or food to, again, Matanos of Yonim to be food also, that which is probably better. You're giving them food, and then, you know, which they have to end up buying. In term, that's always what they say. Nothing to do with Purim, but like people on the street asking. So always the concern is that maybe they're going to buy drugs, and so if you give them food, so you know, if you give them a cup of coffee or a donut, so you know at least you're giving them. You know, they might not want it, but you know, in terms of food. So those are the two school of thoughts of Shalach Manos. Let me ask you something. Is B'Shalach Manos a mitzvah? So what do we usually do before we do a mitzvah? We make a blessing. So how come we don't make a blessing before we give B'Shalach Manos? I mean, I'm not aware of anyone making, nor should you be, but why don't we is the question. We don't make a blessing when we do B'Shalach Manos. So let me ask you a more fundamental question. Every time you give charity, charity is a biblical commandment. We don't make a blessing either. How come? So, this again, we'll stick to two school of thoughts, even though there might be many more. But the two basic schools of thought is because one is because the poor person might not accept it. So therefore, I'll make the bracha, and then like he doesn't take it, so it'll be a blessing in vain. So we don't make a blessing when it comes to charity. Or Maimonides has a much more sweeping position. He says we don't make a blessing not only on charity, but all commandments interpersonal. Like we spoke about before, we have the Ten Commandments. The first five are between man and God, belief in God, not to worship idols. And then the second five, not to murder, not to steal, those are interpersonal.
Bear false witness. Very good, yeah,
lying in the court, right. Mm-hmm. And coveting other people's property. So anytime there's a interpersonal mitzvah, the rabbis never instituted a blessing. How come? How come when it comes to, let's say, eating matzah, putting on tefillin, how come when I'm shaking the fourth species, when I make kiddush every Friday, how come when it comes to a commandment between man and God, yes, bracha, but a commandment between man and man, woman, how come, then what would you think? How come there's no blessing? We make 100 blessings a day. Why are we skimping on the blessings? So the answer is, I'll give you an extreme case, but then we'll apply it to every day. Because let's say an extreme case is someone who's like famished, poor, hungry, they come to your door and they need food. You say, great, okay. Hold on 1 second. Baruch, you finished the bracha, you dropped dead already. So obviously we don't want to make a blessing when it's going to interfere with the commandment. When we're talking about God, we're not worried about God. He can take care of himself. He wants to hear the blessing. But when someone's in need, we don't have rituals getting away. If a person's hungry, you want to, like, same thing, you know, someone's life is in danger, you just get in the car on Shabbos, you don't ask questions. If you're taking care of someone else, we don't have blessings getting, you know, if it's a blessing between us and God, so you there's no rush. You can eat the matzah 30 seconds later. So therefore, we don't make blessings on interpersonal. So therefore, in a second, so why don't we make a blessing on Shalach Manos? So either two schools of thought. Either because it's dependent on someone else, maybe the person won't accept it, but we said according to some, you still get the mitzvah, so then you have to come on to Maimonides' reason that on any interpersonal mitzvahs, we don't make blessings. Dear Anita.
I went down to all the homeless. And they're poor, they're homeless.
The ones out in the tent, you mean, like?
In Hamilton.
Yeah, all over, yeah.
I was thinking, is it a mitzvah to go and give them?
I mean, so obviously, there's a lot to that question. There's a mitzvah to help the poor, Jewish, non-Jewish, But the issue is, are you helping them? So I'm not answering the question. I'm just telling you So some say you shouldn't be giving them because, I'm talking hypothetical, not practically. They have things set up where they have food for them and places to live. They choose not to go because they don't want to go, and therefore by giving them, you're encouraging them. On the other hand, other people say they don't feel safe in those places, they're not getting the food. So every individual case, I see no problem if you want to give them food. To give them money, then they're on drugs and all that, but that's a general question, yeah, and also your own safety. Obviously don't do anything, don't put yourself at risk going into some area and a lot of them unfortunately have mental issues also. That's one of the reasons why there's so many people on the street. Yeah. They're poor because, not necessarily a fault of their own, they never got help and they were probably brought up in a family where they didn't have, they didn't have the parents left. Now, who knows what it is? So therefore, that's not a matter of blaming fault on anyone. I call the fifth Shulchan Aruch, in Jewish code of law, there are four different sections. So what do we call? What's the fifth section? It's called common sense, or seichel in Hebrew. The four aren't going to help. If you don't have any seichel, you don't know how to apply the other four. So as Mark Twain liked to say, unfortunately, common sense ain't too common. Or as I like to say, unfortunately, you can't teach common sense. Either you have it or you don't. So again, you have to use seichel when you do anything, but if you feel it appropriate, you think, these people need it, then there's nothing wrong, and it's a good thing to give them. If you feel you don't want to open the window or you're afraid then obviously don't do it. There are many ways of give, especially in Canada or America, they have a lot of, it's not like you're living in Mexico where if you're poor, you die. What I mean is, I'm not picking on Mexico either, but I mean, there's no government programs where we'll give you insurance, you have, either you take care of yourself or that's it. Mm-hmm. So therefore, but doesn't help. That's true on a society, but I'm sure there are many poor people who fall in between the cracks. And I'm not saying you shouldn't help them, you just have to be careful that you're helping them and not hurting them. Yeah.
Seichel is Yiddish, though, it's not Hebrew. Is it both?
Yeah, seichel, yeah, so... Yeah, sichlis, yeah, so it's a Yiddish expression also,
But the thing is, you see so many, that it came to mind that when you see all these people, when it comes to Purim, if you're giving, can you give to them? I know they're not Jewish.
Yeah, you could, I'm saying, of course, you won't get the mitzvah of Shalach Manas, but you could give to them. I'm saying, yeah, we owe because we believe in Darkei Shalom, we give to everyone. We don't want to cause hatred. What do you mean? You're not giving me because I'm not Jewish? Then they'll hate you. And obviously, you use that's part of common sense to give to everybody. Whoever needs help, you help. Who do you help first? Your mother, your brother, or a stranger? So obviously, the levels of who comes first. But we believe, so all Jews are brothers and sisters. But we believe in helping everybody. But I'm just saying is. Charity starts at home. Is that what they say? Mm-hmm.
Charity begins at home.
Absolutely, very good. Yeah. So therefore, we're into helping everyone. Tikkun Olam is, we will help. We're supposed to be, a light to the world. That's one of the many ways.
Such bad times now. When that concept sounds good, but there's so many homeless.
I know it's still awful. I know, and unfortunately, there are a lot of poor. There are a lot of poor Jewish people we don't realize either. It's terrible all over, I'm saying is, but a lot of, and not just here, in New York, in Brooklyn, your next door neighbor might, they might be in a home that they're not paying the rent, the mortgage, they can't pay their bills, luckily there are a lot of Jewish organizations, as Maimonides puts, I've never seen, and he lived many years ago, and I could continue it, I've never lived in a community, I've never seen a Jewish community where they don't have a chesed fund, where they don't have a fund where they help all the poor people in the city, chevra kadisha, helping with burial. Simchas Chasim Vakala, helping with some people. So that's the DNA. They say, Gemara says, if someone's not a good person, you have to check his yichus to make sure he's Jewish. If you don't have the DNA of Avram Avinu and Sarah, then I'm not saying legally speaking, but you know the point being is that in your DNA, a Jew is supposed to be a giver, you know, and help others. It's not just in the DNA. It's what's true in Jewish psychology is also true of Jewish geography. As we know, there are two seas in Israel. The Sea of Galilee and the Dead Sea. And they seem to be comparing contrast. The Sea of Galilee is full of life, a lot going on there. The Dead Sea, as the name says, there's not much. People go there maybe to, you know, get your back better or you go lie down. Yeah, seesaw, very good. It takes care of different types of situations. So why is it? The question is, they both get the water from the Jordan River. The Jordan River goes into the Sea of Galilee, and it goes into the Dead Sea. So why is one the Dead Sea and one the answer is because not only the Sea of Galilee, true, it gets its water from the Jordan River, but it gives their own water back to the Jordan River. The Dead Sea just takes water but doesn't give. And whether it's Jewish geography, Jewish psychology, if you take and don't give, that's not life. As the Dead Sea says, Judaism's all about giving. And therefore, not only that, the giver gains, and we know the secret, the happy, you know, I know a lot of takers who are very unhappy, and I know a lot of givers who are very happy, which is obvious, because the more you give, the more good you do, it affects on you and you feel good. The one who's just a taker, and the one who feels they have everything coming to them, and they feel, so therefore those are the people usually miserable and playing victim and never happy. So that's not a good thing. So we always push independent, you know, you try, obviously we have the Jewish community to help, but everyone has to, you know, you have to try to, you know, make this, don't, you know, we have to stop blaming everyone else for our problems, even though doesn't mean it's not true at times, but ultimately within ourselves, we have to find the strength to, you know, together with family, you know, community, you know, and be stronger. So that's what Purim is all about. It's the holiday of giving. We have Matanos Lavyonim. We have the Mishalach Manos. And that's what it's all for. And in fact, some point out, the main reason for Shalach Manos is actually for the poor people also. But we know not to embarrass people. Because I said, there are some people that, oh, I don't want any of your charity, even though they need it, but they feel embarrassed. So what do you do? If you give Shalach Manos to the whole community, they'll take, because then they're not singled out. So Shalach Manos developed because the people who didn't want to take, so we wanted to make sure they had food. So if you give to everybody, so therefore you give, and that's the same idea. Also, what I'm about to say is a custom. Megillah reading is a commandment. Shalach Manos, everyone should do. Matanos Lavyonim, everyone should do. Having a Purim meal. Dressing up in a costume is a custom. If you want to do it, it's okay. You could still fulfill your mitzvah of Purim without getting dressed up. Some people think they just do the dress up and they skip everything else. But in addition, it's a good idea. So people get dressed up in costumes. So what's the reason why we get dressed up? So for those who do, is because the whole story of Purim is a reversal. That Achashverosh Haman wanted to murder us, and ultimately, you know, we ended up, you know, Esther turned the tables, and he ended up being killed. So therefore, we dress differently, we dress more in a fun way. But on a deeper level, all Jewish customs really go have a deeper reason. And it's for the reason I just mentioned is because, as I said, there's a commandment on Purim. All year round, we have a commandment to give charity. But there's a special mitzvah on Purim. You can't turn away a poor person. If a poor person asks you for money, you can't turn them away. As I like to say the story when I was in Israel, I was walking in Mea Sharim. It was actually a leap year like this. It was Adar Rishon, actually. And therefore, the first Purim is known as Purim Katan, the small Purim. This week is... So the poor person was screaming out, it's Purim Katan. I'm thinking, like, why are you telling? I know that. Oh, I know, because you think he says the mitzvah of Purim applies today and make sure don't forget about me. So on Purim, there's a mitzvah not to turn anyone away. So therefore, you give to everyone. So the custom developed, especially covering your face with a mask, that's why the mask, because if everyone's dressed up in costumes, so when the poor person could knock on your door and ask for money and no one's going to know who they are. So again, it's another way to avoid embarrassment to the poor and show sensitivity. So all these things always go back to, you know, important Jewish principles of not embarrassing people, treating people with dignity, and ultimately, you know, we try to help. If we're fortunate to be able to have a Purim Suda, we want to make sure everyone else can also. And, you know, that's true with everything, but especially that was one of the essence of the day of Purim, as always helping helping the vulnerable. So we have the Megillah reading that we'll have Purim morning here. And that's a commandment of publicizing the miracle. We want to tell over the story of what happened. And therefore, and as well, this is also a custom. If you don't want to make noise, you don't have to. But it there's a custom on Haman when you say the word Haman in the Megillah, either people stomp their foot, some people have groggers, or people... I heard someone else tell me a new thing. They come with pasta boxes, and I guess they make... I never saw that, but whatever makes noise works. So, again, and then... So what's... You know, people don't realize what are they making noise for. The reason we're making noise as Haman is because, again, goes back to education. Educating your children, educating yourself, is that the only way, we know, you know, from the Holocaust and any other evil, good people merely have to be quiet for evil to succeed. As long as you're quiet, you're not helping the people who need you. You're helping the people who are doing the murdering. So in Judaism, you got to stand up. You have to make a you have to make a protest. Again, not every there's two reasons we make a protest. Like I remember, when I was growing up, but when I was growing up and I was younger, so I remember we had in New York, we had the Soviet Union. We had rallies for the Jews in Soviet Union who weren't able to leave. So again, so that was a debate among experts. Everyone agrees you should do something to help the people. So some felt having a public protest, you know, in New York, and we did it every year. Others felt you're actually hurting them because they'll take them out on the Jews in Soviet. Some said you should write letters to your Congress. So be it as it may, you know, we have to find out from the expert what's the best way of accomplishing anything, whatever it may be. Like, when we had the rallies now, you know, we had the big rally in Washington, Ottawa. So you speak to the experts and see what is the best way. By experts, I mean people who are in the political arena and or people who know, you know, whatever the rally is about. And you have to make sure you could be very well intentioned, but we always have to be careful. We can't not to make the situation worse. Unintentionally, no one's going to do it, but we always have to try to get the right info. Again, and sometimes you can have a different opinion, so you just go with the one you think you find more compelling is the right answer. But whatever the case may be, so the two reasons you have a protest. For the obvious reason is to get the result, to get the Soviet Jews out of, you know, get the Jews out of Russia, to stop what's happening in Gaza, you know, whatever the support is, you know, whatever, that's the goal. But independently, even if you're not successful, it's for yourself. That when you see evil happening, this to do nothing is not an answer. Even if you won't succeed, the fact you're making a first of all, you never know if you're going to succeed anyway until later on. So it's not like you know beforehand. But even if you're not even sure, again, as long as you're not going to make it worse by protest, but assuming protesting is a good thing, so then even if you don't get you might get a little bit, but you have for yourself, it doesn't necessarily have to be a protest. You have to make some type of stand or talk about it to show that we're fighting against evil, and hopefully we win more than we lose when we're fighting against. That's the story with there were three advisors to Paro. This is when going back to Passover, the exodus from Egypt, but before the exodus, the exile in Egypt. So Paro he called in his three advisors and said, how do we solve the Jewish problem? That's a common question among anti-Semites. So he had three advisors. So one advisor was Bilam, who we'll read about him later on in the book of Numbers. He said, what's the problem? Kill the Jews. Very simple solution. The other, Jethro, who later became the father-in-law to Moses, he said, how appalling. What? I can't be part of any country that's doing genocide. I am out of here. And he ran and he left town. And you have Eov, Job, he sat there silently. So the Talmud tells us each one got rewarded and punished accordingly. Like, so what was the punishment? So Bilam, who said to kill the Jews, he got killed. So Yisro, who gave up a prominent position in Egypt, became a prominent position, and his kids became prominent position on the Jewish court, the Sanhedrin. But Eov, he was silent. So his punishment was living a life of pain. Like, what's the connection? So that's the connection. Because when other, the example I give is, when you're in the shower and it gets hot and you just jump out and scream, ah! Like, is that going to take away the burn on your back? No. But if it hurts, you scream. That's the human condition. So if someone else is hurting, you scream whether it's going to help or not. So Yisro, the fact that he was able to sit silently and not do anything, that itself deserves punishment, even though he didn't actively do anything. And that's the concept we learn every Purim. When we make the noise by Haman, is we have to show if there's evil going on, people are being, certainly a genocide, but even on a lower level, people are being mistreated, things aren't happening. We're taught at a young age, you have to be, you have to be an activist in a good way. I don't mean other activists are looking to, the opposite, are looking to cause problems, not help, but a good activist, someone who's out looking for their, trying to help people, not cause chaos in the world. So that's what we do. So even the customs of dressing up on Purim, it's all about sensitivity to the poor, even making noise. Again, it's always to get the kids involved, like the Pesach, the Afikomen, we make Shalach Manis. It's always to get the next generation involved in their Yiddishkeit. It's always there. But in addition, not just getting involved, but to teach them, it's a perfect teaching opportunity. We're here, we don't want to embarrass the poor. We have to be very sensitive, giving charity. And even with the, making noise at home, and you're teaching them, it's not just, chaos is, no, someone's evil and they're trying to destroy people, you have to make a stand, you have to make noise and protest. And, those are the major functions of the holiday of Purim that soon we shall be celebrating on Sunday. Any questions? Comments?
Yes, I would like to make a comment.
Please, now's your chance.
You will agree with me. I think it's very important that people speak, speak,